I don't hate white people. My wife is white. I just want equality. That's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking for more. The fact that Hollywood was rejecting me, it made me strong, made me write my one-man shows. And I wrote Mambo Mouth in 1990. And in my theater, in my house, was JFK Jr., rest in peace, Al Pacino, Olympia Dukakis, Arthur Miller, Sam Shepard, all the tall, angular white playwrights.
That's the great actor, comedian John Leguizamo. I'm a really big fan of his because I always admired his comedy through his one-man shows. His shows are always about something. And this is a really cool conversation about the second season of his show, John Leguizamo Does America, and how he tries to really open people's eyes to the Latino community. So it's really fun, and he's really funny in this conversation. You're going to enjoy it. Before we get to that, I'm a Patriots fan, New England Patriots. This whole Belichick dating Jordan Hudson, this young girl, I still see people like twisted in knots about it. It's like, good for him, good for her. Who cares? I mean, what's the... Yeah. But although like with women or like your wife, like my wife, you got to feign outrage, right? Because my wife's like, oh my God, that's so gross. Can you? And I'm like, yeah, honey, it's terrible. Meanwhile, I'm on my laptop and I've got like 8 tabs open of pictures of Jordan Hudson. You know, I'm Googling like Jordan Hudson bikini, Jordan Hudson bending over. Like, yes, honey, it's very inappropriate. Anyway, but it's not weird. I mean, it's not weird unless you're still hung up on the idea that love has to be between two people with matching cholesterol levels. No. Look, I think it's pretty clear what's going on with her. She's tired of dating guys who still live with their parents and decide it's better to date the actual parent because, you know, the parent owns a house. All right, listen, on tour, Permission to Speak, my Broadway show, go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Also, my stand-up touring with that as well. Yes, I'm still at The Late Show performing there. And follow me on social media if you're not already and enjoy John Leguizamo. And, you know, date somebody a quarter of your age or 4 times your age. What difference does it make? Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show and welcome, first timers. Very excited to have someone that I have admired for a long time as not just an actor, but a really great comedian with a really strong voice and point of view. Emmy and Tony Award winner, amazing theater shows, Freak, Ghetto Clown, Latin History for Morons, films, Violent Night, John Wick, Chef. I love that. And you guest hosted The Daily Show for a week, which is a show I wrote on for a lot of years. It's John Leguizamo. It's great to have you on the show, John.
Oh, thank you for the great intro. Yeah. Oh, you wrote for The Daily Show when I was there.
Well, no, I had left because I heard you were going to host and I didn't want to be. No, I'm just kidding. I was.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Run to the hills.
I'm a comedian. You're a comedian. I got to bust your balls. No, I had written going. Actually, I was one of the original writers when it started with Craig Kilborn and then through Jon Stewart's run. And then I went over to the Colbert Report and I work on The Late Show now. But I love what you did with the show and just been a great fan of yours.
I was number 2 in ratings of all the guest hosts.
Yeah, I know. It was amazing. I called my huge Italian family, and that's what boosted the ratings. Everybody watched.
Thank God for those Italians. I love them.
It's like the
grazie,
Latinos.
Grazie tanto.
Yeah, there you go. Listen, let's talk about you got a really great show. It's second season now on MSNBC. Leguizamo Does America. New episodes are out now, airing weekly. And I got to tell you, there's shows like this where, you know, stars are going to different, their indigenous world and sort of exposing you. But yours is a little different because it's not just entertaining. There's a big educational component about the Latino community and the contributions Latinos have made. And I really dig that it's like politics and entertainment and road trip and history lesson. And I assume that was intentional and sort of, how much work goes into prepping for that? And how do you figure out the balance of all of those different components?
Well, you know, I've always approached my writing and my comedy to elevate. You know, I've always used it as a platform to make a difference. I always want my work to make a difference somehow. I feel like I'm more of an artist than an entertainer because artists are political animals and artists put their necks on the chopping block. They risk everything. And mm-hmm. I've always been that guy. Mm. And so I wanted to do this show to have my personality. You know, I'm very political. I'm also crazy funny. I love dance. I love food. I love people. I love communing with folks. So we put it all there. You know, I'm a history nerd. I'm like the Rayman of Latino history. Like, I know so much shit. It is unbelievable. I don't know how I keep it in my head, but I do.
All right. Wait. Give us a thing. Give us a thing that none of us would know about Latino history that we should know, like from your.
Okay. You ready, baby? You ready? Here we go.
I got a pen and a piece of paper. Let's go.
That's not enough. That's not, bitch. You got to get yourself a computer. Anyway, so Latinos were the only ethnic group to have fought in every single war America has ever had. 10,000 unknown Latino patriots fought in the American Revolution. Juan de Miralles raised, a Cuban brother, raised $2 million for George Washington because they had a bromance. And he raised $2 million from Cuba, Mexico, and Spain. And General Bernardo Galvez raised an army of 3,000 troops, Puerto Rican, Cuban, Mexican American, freed slaves, and Native Americans, and they kicked the British out of the South so they couldn't surround the New England Patriots, the revolutionaries, not the football team, in case you get it twisted. But I know you didn't know that. We're the heaviest medal honor winners in of any ethnic group. We have almost 60 medals of honor.
I had no idea. So you got me. And that's amazing. And that's what's, you know, you had this great quote you said about like sort of education and representation of Latinos. You said, quote, and you're like, wait a minute, what? How is this kept from me? Why is this kept from me? And then you start to understand that he who writes the history textbooks controls society. And I really have admired how that's been a big through line through all of your work, stage shows, film, TV, this now. And that you just gave us a tidbit of something we didn't know, but in the bigger scheme of things, what is it that you think we still don't understand or appreciate about Latinos that you're trying to get across in this series right now?
Well, it's crazy. I mean, our contributions are massive and erased, completely erased, especially now with the attacks on critical race theory and, you know, Black Latino studies. It's just going to, the erasure continues, because if you have all the information about us, you have to respect us. You have to give us political power. You have to allow us to rule ourselves. The first case against segregation in America, because we were segregated, massacred, shot alive, lynched. Not as many as my Black brothers and sisters, but 6,000 of us were lynched. And we were experimented on, sterilized against our will. The first case against segregation was a Latino family in 1914. The Maestas family fought in Denver, Colorado to be in the better schools because they weren't allowed to go with white people. And they won. And then in 1940, Sylvia Mendez fought against California segregation. And she won in the 40s, paving the way for Brown versus Board of Ed. You know, Johns Hopkins University did a study and found that 87% of Latino contributions to the making of the U.S. are not in history textbooks. Mm. So can you imagine the disservice that does to us? That's why you don't ever see a Latino band of brothers or a Latino in World War II, World War I, but we were there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We were there. 120,000 of us fought in World War I with a ton of heroes, and 500,000 Latinos fought in World War II. With incredible heroes. I can give you just a taste, but Guy Gabaldon was a 19-year-old East LA Mexican-American kid, and he captured 1,000 enemy soldiers by himself at 19.
19?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. At 19, I was trying to get into bars when it was 21. That was my big thing. Jesus.
I feel God, that was my thing. I couldn't do it though, because I looked so freaking young. I used to take my mom's mascara and draw a mustache.
We used to get David Volpe. He always had one kid that he was like hairy when he was 12, and he would go he was like a little gorilla, and he was like, I don't want to go. Shut up. Go in and get a case and come out where you're in the car.
But, you know, I went with those guys to, like, the clubs, like Studio 54, but he would get in, but I still couldn't get in. And I'd be, like, looking all sad, like,
But he would go in. I go, no, man. Well, you go do your thing. You just tell me about live for me.
This is a Latino being held down, man. This is bullshit. Like, what's going on? Like, I want to use this as a bridge to talk about the effect that you're seeing now. You're going to six cities in this series. You're going to Philly, Phoenix, Denver, New Orleans, Raleigh, and San Antonio. And given that you have to plan these shows in advance, and then there's been, in, you know, since this new administration's come in, this hard-ass immigration policy and all this crazy shit happening, what effect have you seeing as that happening in the Latino communities, and how is that affecting the work you're doing and all of that?
Well, you know, I feel like the show is an antidote to the horrors that we're witnessing, this mass incarceration of immigrants. But we know what the word, I mean, immigrants is really Latinos. That's all we're seeing mostly, is like 99.9% Latinos. And you know, I could almost fly with the whole thing of Trump's, we're going to deport criminals. Okay. Yep. I'm cool with that.
Yep.
But these are not criminals. 99.9% of immigrants are hardworking, decent, contributing members of their communities.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not getting due process, and these guys in masks that don't identify themselves and going to hospitals. I mean, it's disgusting. It's cruel. It's inhuman. And dangerous to our economy, because Latinos run the economy. Without us, there's no farming. There's no food service. We build houses. We do the infrastructure work. Without us, we're the essential workers. What are you doing to the economy? Now he's like waffling, like, okay, baby, we'll let hospitality stay.
And then, right.
But then he lies, and then they go to work, and then he rounds them up. It's disgusting. Right. It's cruel.
Yeah.
Unnecessary.
And I, you know, my grandparents were first generation Americans, and you know, they took a step down to come here, worked from Italy, they worked factory jobs, whatever, and they were proud to be here. If they were this crackdown now, I wouldn't be here. They would have been kicked out of the country. Like, I mean, it's like they were the backbone that built the country, just like other, like the Irish and the Spanish and the Mexican, etc. Hispanics, I don't know, you know, it's like I'm Italian, I could say this. If there were a Trump then, there'd be no masonry work. You wouldn't have any pathways. Right. You wouldn't have any bricks around your house, because that's the Italians. That's what we did.
Great masons, incredible masons. Yeah.
And so what of these cities you went to, like Philly, I'm basically from New York now. And I think of Philly, but good point. Like I think of Italian, I think Irish, you don't necessarily think Latino, you think Black, and I don't immediately think Latino, but the show shows there's like a big population. So what's anything surprised you from in any of these cities that you went to in this year's series, that really like blew you away in terms of whether it was food or whether it was politics or whatever?
Oh yeah, yeah. But you know, part of the reason that we don't know that there are Latinos in Philly or New Orleans is because we're just so invisible.
Mm.
You know, we're the most aggressively excluded ethnic group in Hollywood, which is crazy because we're 30% of the U.S. box office. And if it's a big movie, we're 40% of the U.S. box office. Mm. We're a third of subscribers in streaming, a third of sports fans. We add $3.8 trillion. Capital T to the GDP yearly. If we were our own country, Latinos in America, we'd be the fourth largest economy in the world, bigger than Brazil, bigger than India, bigger than France, bigger than England. But we're like virtually invisible, bro.
Why do you think that is? Because I will say there's voices like yours, there's Jennifer Lopez, there's, you know, you can point to significant people in the culture who are Latino. Why do you think, I don't disagree with you, I'm trying to figure out, man, he makes a good point.
I mean, dude, it's purely racism. I mean, there's not one J-Lo, there's not one me, there's not one Lin-Manuel, there's millions of us, but they're not getting the shots. Dude, SNL is in New York. New York is, we're equal to the white population. Yeah. I was never on SNL, and I was on Broadway. I'm getting Tony nominations, Obie, but hold on.
Hold on. The reason you didn't get on SNL is because you couldn't grow a mustache at 18. That was the problem. Like if you had,
I could have glued one on by then with the money I had. I could have got transplants. I could have gone to and got me a serious mustache.
But don't you think in a weird way it's better? Because if you had and you got into that river, you wouldn't be John today in the sense of like the outrage that and I mean this in a good way, that feeds your art, right? The voice that you have.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hollywood forced me to go the route and it made me self-reliant, made me an incredible writer, but I'm strong, bro. What about all the other 70 million Latinos in this country who aren't as strong as I am?
Yeah.
Why only the fiercest and beast gets to survive? No, it's not cool. For only 58.9% of the population. Why are they getting 100% of the executives, 100% of the movies, 100% of the roles? It's just not, they're getting overrepresented. I mean, I'm not, I don't hate white people. My wife is white and I love white people. It's not about that. It's just about, I want parity. I just want equality. That's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking for more. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the fact that Hollywood was rejecting me, it made me strong, made me write my one-man shows. And I wrote Mambo Mouth in 1990, and I got an amazing review. And in my theater, in my house, was JFK Jr., rest in peace, Al Pacino, Olympia Dukakis, Arthur Miller came to the show, Sam Shepard, all the tall, angular white playwrights.
Jesus. That's why I couldn't get a ticket, man. I was like, this is ridiculous. John's giving tickets away to everybody.
How about Broadway now? Neither one of us could get a ticket on Broadway. That George Clooney show was $2,000 for orchestra.
I know. That was like, insane. He was on the Late Show as a guest, and I almost wanted to run into his green room and go, hey, man, could I just two free tickets for, you know, fellow performer, whatever, but I didn't have
can you help a guy out who's down on his luck?
You know, go with it. Mess up my hair, like rip my clothes a little bit.
Oh my God, you know that? That's how I used to do the opposite to get into Broadway because I was an aspiring young act. I couldn't afford it. So I used to second act. It's a thing where you go to Broadway, you put on your best polyester jacket, you get a pack of cigarettes, and go there and you wait for the second act because there were smokers back then. They will come out and you start smoking. And then if they drop a playbill, I grab it, run to the bathroom, wait for the bell that starts the second act and run to the empty seats.
I would have never thought. How did you figure that out?
It took some time to figure it out because I used to go to the shows and go, I can't afford it. And then all of a sudden I was going, wait a minute, they all got in the second act. There must be people who run out and hate shows. So and there was always an empty seat.
And then you got to sit there and look really, like really not give anything away to the usher. So like you got to be watching and so that they don't come
but
over.
You can't be looking over your shoulder all the time because then that's a clue. You have to look straight ahead. But you know what's good about it? I learned how to write because I always had to try to figure out what the first act was all about because I couldn't tell what the fuck was going on.
Wow. That's amazing. That makes the total sense. That's like, it's how you get. Do you ever get it wrong? Like you thought it was like one thing?
Many times. many times. I mean, like Agnes of God, I didn't know what the hell was going on in that one.
What was the hardest thing about writing your first one man? Was it harder than you thought it was going to be? Did it come easier? Were there any particular hurdles artistically, creatively, in putting that thing together?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You know, some pieces were easier to write. You know, I used to do the performance art spaces, which was Hayden piece, my Oasis, because I didn't really like the comedy clubs. I didn't really like set up joke rhythms or storytelling. I like long ass winded storytelling.
Plus, I saw you. You were kind of a shitty stand up. No, I'm just kidding. I never saw you. I'm just busting your balls. No, you.
No. Yeah, basically because I didn't like it. I'm kidding.
I never. I know you're great at everything. Shut up. You're great at.
No, I did the comic strip. I did all. I opened up.
Did the comic strip with Lucian. Did Lucian talk to you, Lucian?
Yeah, oh my God, Lucian! You remember him? It was
Hello,
like late
John.
Satan's name.
John, I saw your act, and I think you're a little too Latino for this room. Did he say something stupid to you like that?
He was always like that. You know, the lottery on Monday nights, catch the rising star.
I did
all
that.
That.
Yeah.
But I did sketch comedy.
Yeah. And so that first one, when that came and that opened the gates, the creative juices were there for the second. The ones that followed came a little easier, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I started cracking the three act structure. That's what the first one was, more like separate monologues that were loosely tied together by slight connections. But then the second one was a Latino family who owned a laundromat service.
Right.
And it was like a Rashomon. So everybody was telling their point of view of the wedding that was about to happen. So I started cracking the three act structure, and then cool. I really killed it by the time I got to Freak.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Listen, I could talk to you all day. I'm so happy that you're doing this series. I think it's in the genre of others, but I think it's, you know, adds a little bit more in terms of the broad expanse that you cover, not just entertainment, politics, literature, food. It is on MSNBC right now. It's airing weekly. Leguizamo does America. A nice Latino boy, like a nice Italian boy. He's a good guy. He's a good guy, this Leguizamo guy.
Hey, Stronzo, release the cats.
All right, buddy. Good luck. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, much love, man.
All right, that was John Leguizamo. So funny. Great energy. I could talk to him all day. And I love how committed he is to the things he believes in. He's really a true artist. And please follow me on all the social media platforms at Paul Mercurio. Always making fun videos. Got a lot of clips from my stand-up and Permission to Speak Broadway show up there. And on tour, go to my website, paulmercurio.com, and we'll see you next week.